Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
The relentless exchanges of fire between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah in recent days have stoked fears that the longtime foes are now moving towards all-out war. Israel's military struck dozens of Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon overnight. The Iranian-backed militants responded this morning, hitting a number of Israeli military targets. Well, despite appeals for restraint from global leaders who are scrambling to promote diplomacy, a ground offensive in the region could now open up another major conflict in the Middle East. A short time ago, I spoke to Jeremy Bowen, international editor with BBC News, and I began by asking him to give us his sense of how quickly this war is escalating.
I think very rapidly at the moment. I think that is a deliberate policy by Israel. They're quite jubilant about what they see as big success and massive damage inflicted on Hezbollah in Lebanon. Ever since they did that attack on pagers, then on radios, and then massive airstrikes, killing something like 500 people, but according to the Israelis, doing a lot of damage to Hezbollah's stocks. I think the big question is whether what they're doing will achieve their ends, which is to provide safety to northern Israel, so 60,000 displaced people can go back. And also what they've said they want to do is to push Hezbollah back 10 miles or so back into Lebanon. And they want to also destroy their military infrastructure in that area. So to do all that kind of stuff, you can't do all of that from the air. So that makes me think, well, will they escalate up to some kind of ground offensive?
And do you believe that that is likely?
I think the way things are going now, that's the progression, yeah. You know, they might decide that they've done enough, but Prime Minister Netanyahu said very clearly that what he wants to do is to change the balance of power on Israel's northern border. In other words, to get, rather than the kind of attritional war that has been going on since the day after the Hamas attacks last October on Israel, Hezbollah started rocketing into northern Israel. I mean, their dispute between Hezbollah and Israel, their fight goes back to the 1980s. But this episode started then when Hezbollah took the decision to start doing that. And the Israelis have said they want to stop them firing into the north. Mm-hmm. Now, so while Hezbollah has a massive arsenal, and while they've destroyed a lot, there's probably an awful lot left. So will they be able to stop that? So in other words, what they've set out themselves is that the way you measure success is stop the rockets coming into Israel. And so if Hezbollah is still rocketing Israel, then they are going to further escalate. So basically, it's, I think, a gamble taken by them that they can inflict so much pain so quickly that Hezbollah and their Iranian backers and allies will think twice. But I think that is so against the DNA of the organization.
Yeah, and you've been writing that, you know, Israel may have taken that calculation that Hezbollah already is in a weakened state. We know, though, that they are a heavily armed organization. How ready is Hezbollah for this escalation, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, their leader, Hassan Nasrallah, who is he's a very beleaguered character right now. A lot of his closest allies going back 20, 30 years, the men he's had around him have been killed by Israel in the last week. So he said, though, he's basically almost sort of taunted them. And he said, come on, then bring it on. If you want to come into Lebanon, we'll be waiting for you. Mm-hmm. The last time Israel did that, 2006, it ended pretty inconclusively. It was a draw, effectively. And Israel went back with a bloody nose. And while they inflicted massive damage on Lebanon and also on Hezbollah, killed a lot of their people, the fact that it did beat them. And it's difficult territory there. I've spent a lot of time over the years in South Lebanon. It's rocky. There are gorges. There are valleys and things like that. And so there's, you know, it's for the kind of warfare that Hezbollah would do. They wouldn't just stand and fight. They'd be, you know, it's guerrilla warfare, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's their territory. And they've been preparing for a long time.
I was looking at some of the haunting pictures on the BBC website this morning. There's one in particular where a woman is standing outside of her car. There's plastic bags piled on top of it. She has a tiny infant in her arms. Mm-hmm. But unlike in Gaza, at least there is somewhere for people to go at this stage. But the mass movement of people has similar consequences for hospitals, for frontline services, for the schools now that are being set up as shelters. Can you tell us what you're hearing about that movement?
Well, it's I too have been watching the pictures, and I'm sitting here in Jerusalem. But the, you know, essentially the highways have been turned into one-way streets because people go on both lanes. They're all going one direction, three, four, five across. They're not just even going by the lanes. They're all squeezing in. And it's taking hours and hours and hours to go north, which is what they want to do to get away from Israel. I mean, there is quite a long history of doing this when Israel and Hezbollah are fighting in the south. So it's not something that hasn't happened before. But Lebanon has been in the throes of a terrible economic crisis now for some years, and it's a big struggle for them to try to accommodate everybody that needs accommodating, to deal with the wounded. No, it's Israel. Lebanon is a really weak country. The state barely exists. And so it's a really difficult thing for them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, this, you know, an end to this will depend on what happens in Gaza. A solution to that seems further away than ever. And again, you write that what the Americans have put on the table, it seems nobody is buying that.
Well, yeah, Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah, has said that this will go on until there's a ceasefire in Gaza. That will be the cue for them to stop rocketing Israel. Not what Israel does, but what happens in Gaza. The Americans do have a deal that they've tried to put on the table, which is essentially based on the UN resolution that ended the last war of 2006. But I think at the moment, yeah, you're right, I don't think people are really listening to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Israelis now believe that they have an opportunity to change things in their favor. They actually wanted to do this last year after the Hamas attacks. They thought they'd deal with Lebanon as well. And the Americans persuaded them or told them not to do it. But, you know, after a year of basically defying Joe Biden, the Americans are still saying very publicly, actually, they do not want a ground war in Lebanon. And they believe that diplomacy, not military force, is the way of dealing with this. And the Israelis are essentially, well, they're saying, no, we disagree. We're doing it our way. Thank you very much.
And you have the added complication, of course, of the US presidential election coming up in November and leaders having to scramble to meet with either the would-be leaders or the current President Joe Biden and his representatives. Mm. I mean, all of this makes this diplomacy much more difficult. You've the war in Gaza, the war in Ukraine, the potential eruption now of a war in Lebanon.
Yeah, towards the end of a U.S. administration, the president is always something of a lame duck because there could be a new face in the White House, or there could be, you know, even if someone is going for a second term. And because Joe Biden has had to step down in a very public and rather humiliating manner, I think he's even more of a lame duck. And it's become clear, and there have been reports out of Washington, that his people are saying, look, we've run out of time. We're not going to have the impact on the Middle East that we certainly were hoping might be possible a year ago when this war started, and when Biden went over to Israel and he had a grand plan for trying to sort out the Middle East involving a rapprochement between Israel and Saudi Arabia and a Palestinian state. Well, none of that has happened.
Mm-hmm. And all of that must give succor to Benjamin Netanyahu to continue on the path that he's on, despite the pressure that he's under at home.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are plenty of voices raised in Israel who are saying that Netanyahu wants to prolong the war in Gaza and other wars because this keeps him in office. It keeps his government together. He's backed by ultra-nationalist forces who are absolutely against agreements with Israel's enemies. And also, you know, if he stopped being prime minister, the war ends, and he's still prime minister, his trial on very serious charges of corruption would restart again. So while he denies any of that is the case, it's almost become an article of faith here in Israel that that's actually what he's trying to do. And the Americans and the Brits and others in private say very similar things.
Mm. So you're saying that he is likely to be continued, the support he's getting from the right in his party and in his government will spur him on in his calculations to open up this war on another front?
Well, they have said, the right wing have said, the ultra-nationalists who support him have said that when it comes to Gaza, if you do a deal there, that's it, we're out, your government's toppled. There are people who say, no, they call their bluff, they don't mean it. But they say that they do, and he doesn't want to take that particular risk. The Israeli opposition has said, look, we will support you if they fall out, if they leave the government, we will support you to get a deal over the line, and most importantly, get the hostages back. But that's not an offer that he's accepted.
Jeremy, thank you very much for joining us. That's Jeremy Bowen, international editor with the BBC News, speaking to us from Jerusalem. I'm joined now by Professor Ray Murphy from the Irish Centre for Human Rights at the University of Galway. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Claire.
What's your sense of what you've been seeing over the last number of days and hours, indeed, in South Lebanon?
Well, we're witnessing a very serious escalation of the situation, and it's impossible to predict where this will lead to. But it means that, for example, the Irish forces and the UN forces, peacekeeping forces in South Lebanon, are now in a very precarious position. And it also means that the Israelis have decided to take decisive action. And exactly what the long-term objective is not clear, but they could well be getting ready for a ground incursion. And normally, the military tactic adopted would be to soften up your targets, to bombard as many areas as possible where you believe there are Hezbollah forces or munitions. And unfortunately, as a consequence, much of the infrastructure of Lebanon is again being targeted, as it was in 2006. And there's been a massive displacement of Lebanese civilians, not to mention the 500 casualties, including many women and children.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Taoiseach Minister for Foreign Affairs has said there are no plans to take our 300 or so soldiers out. They're on their peacekeeping mission in the area there. But they are in a very dangerous and grave situation, aren't they?
Unfortunately, yes. And we must remember that the UN forces, the peacekeeping mission, is peacekeeping, traditional peacekeeping, in the sense that it doesn't have the mandate to use force to try and enforce a solution or a stabilization mission to try to compel the parties to comply with a UN resolution. It's there with the consent of the Israelis, the Lebanese government, and Hezbollah. And, of course, that means nothing at present. So it finds itself in the middle of a major conflagration, and its two priorities would be, one is force protection, ensure that they are doing what they can in the very limited circumstances that have now been created. But also, in 2017, when an Irish force commander was there, they brought in a protection of civilian implementation or contingency plan. Now, fortunately for the UN forces, most of the civilians have left the south, but there's still a large number of civilians that are unable to leave and don't have anywhere to go. So the provision of whatever protection is possible to those civilians and the delivery of humanitarian aid would be important. Mm. But in the long term, I still believe the mission has a vital role to play because this round of hostilities will continue, but it will end. And you now have almost 10,000 troops on the ground ready to implement a mandate, which, ironically, if it had been implemented fully in the first instance, would have prevented this situation arising.
Yeah, I mean, there are some listening to this who would say, given where this looks as though it's heading, it might be time for us to consider withdrawing our forces. Now, you clearly don't subscribe to that view.
No, I don't. And in the short term, I mean, the threat or the danger is immediate. And if you try to withdraw forces right now, you actually are going to endanger them. If the whole mission must fold and withdraw UNIFIL as a peacekeeping operation in its entirety, that would be a huge logistical exercise and would not be possible, I believe, in the current climate. So they're actually safer where they are because they have been preparing for this. As I've said before, the Irish forces have a lot of experience in this area. They're very well trained, they're well led, and they have put in protection measures. So right now it's a matter of sit it out and wait and see what happens and be ready to play a constructive role when the opportunity arises.
All right, Ray, we'll leave it there. That's Professor Ray Murphy from the Irish Centre for Human Rights at the University of Galway.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.